Hey, listeners, we're nearing the end of our 15th anniversary fundraising campaign, and we need your help to meet our goal. This campaign offers you a chance to win a unique food and music experience in one of the most exciting cities in America. Here's how it works. Donate to HRN and you'll be entered to win dinner for two and two tickets to a concert in one of eight amazing cities: New York, Los Angeles, Philadelphia, Nashville, Las Vegas, Charleston, Ardmore, Pennsylvania, and Asheville. All donations support our work educating food system storytellers. And when you donate, you can choose one of those cities and you'll be entered to win dinner and two tickets to a show. So help us reach our goal and enter to win dinner and a show in the city of your choice. Check out heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/15. Thank you.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit korin.com.
I'm HRN's Executive Director, Katie Mosman-Wadler, jumping in to tell you about this week's episode of Meat and Three, Heritage Radio Network's weekly food roundup. This week, we're introducing you to some amazing women taking a stand.
So often, being sexually harassed feels like a loss of control, and so I wanted to have these very tangible guides to say, here's what you can do.
Others are pushing for more diversity at major food industry events.
I still feel really determined to do, you know, whatever I can to help shift that and in a direction that's not just more diverse, but more equitable.
We also have a report on that summer business staple, the lemonade stand.
The lemonade stand might be the purest form of starting a business. Low overhead, easy to get into, and requires little experience or special equipment.
Don't miss Meat and Three, your weekly 15-minute food news roundup from HRN. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app. Search MEAT plus sign THREE. And thanks, as always, for listening.
Welcome to Japanese. I'm your host Akiko Katayama, a food writer and the director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deep understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from our studio at Roberto's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deli in the supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi ramen izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, so I try to demystify it in this program, like who guests. And my guest today is Yuji Haraguchi, who is the chef owner of Yuji Ramen and Okonomi, a Japanese teishoku or healthy set menu restaurant, and also a Japanese style fishmonger or sakana, all in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. And he joined me on episode 2 and 35 and talked about his passion for inspiring non-Japanese people to understand the unique style I would call seat-to-table food culture. Also, we had two of his great staff at the Osakana, Luke Devin and Emma Kramer, on episode 56. And Yuji's energy never stops, and now he has a restaurant in Kyoto, and just last week he opened a Okozushi in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. So today we will discuss what these two exciting new restaurants are. But quickly before we start, Japan Eats is available on Heritage Radio Network website, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. So please go to iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify and subscribe to Japan Eats. And please write a review. We really appreciate your feedback. Also, if you have ideas about topics of the show or show guests, please let us know. You can email us at japaneseats@heritageradionetwork.org or akikokatayama.com. Now let's start our conversation with Yuji Haraguchi. Hello, Yuji. Welcome back to Japan Eats.
Thank you for having me back.
So this is exciting. So your third episode, you never stopping, like new place, new ideas. It's just very exciting. So congratulations.
Yeah, thank you so much.
So first of all, for our listeners who missed episode 235 of this program, let's talk about your background briefly. So you came to Boston in 2009 and worked for a Japanese fish importer and distributor. And from that point, how did you decide to start a ramen shop called Yuji Ramen?
So when I was selling fish to restaurants in Boston and in New York, most of my customers are sushi restaurants. And I just saw the new trend of ramen rising, and then I just thought that I could do something new with the mazemen, which is a processed ramen, and also fish-based broth ramen. Mm. That's the reason why I opened Yuji Ramen 2012.
Okay. Yeah, when you were at the fish company, I saw you at the chef's event, and the, you are really advocating how great the fresh fish is from Japan. And you are totally an ambassador, so it was very inspiring. Mm-hmm. So the idea is to introduce the fish flavor on ramen. Mm-hmm. That's the idea, right?
Yes.
Okay, and so what is what's special about Yuji Ramen? You said mazemen.
Yeah, so the reason why I started mazemen was because mazemen is a served process, and then I thought that it makes it a lot easier for American customers to try.
Mm.
Yeah, although the traditional ramen comes in a hot broth and a noodle, and it might be a little bit difficult to slurp while it's hot. So I just wanted to make the boundary a little bit lower by introducing processed ramen.
Right, and also, of course, people think of pork, chashu when it comes to ramen, but do you topped with fish.
Yeah, and then a lot of the same result can come with the cooking fish bones, just as much as the pork and chicken. And I thought that by removing pork as much as possible, the ramen can be more accessible for a lot of people.
Mm, and lighter.
Lighter, yeah.
Right, and you can eat it every day if you want to. okay, and so the by the way, so Yuji Ramen is now one of the precious 9 ramen shops at the Yokohama Ramen Museum, which means you are doing extremely well, recognized by Japanese Ramen Authority too, right?
I never thought about bringing my ramen back to Japan, and then the people at the Ramen Museum came to us a few years ago and asked us to reintroduce our ramen back in Japan. So we've been there since last year, March.
Wow. I heard it's only strictly by invitation only to be at the Ramen Museum.
Yeah,
so
you have to be invited and then look at all the other restaurants that are at the museum before are very well-established restaurants. So I believe that I can be just like their companies if I graduate from the museum.
Right. So innovation, that's my... the word I think of when I think of what you do. So, right? So what's the concept of okonomi?
So okonomi introduces the traditional Japanese breakfast in the set meal of what's called the ichiju sansai.
Mm.
Ichiju sansai means rice and miso soup, and then the protein usually, which we do with the seafood, and then comes with a side dishes with vegetables.
Mm.
So just represents the meaning of a balanced diet.
Mm.
And then so you start your breakfast with a very balanced meal.
Mm. Right. So that's a classic traditional Japanese breakfast. But nowadays, it's almost impossible to find a kind of place to serve Japanese ichiju sansai breakfast. Even in Japan, too.
Yeah, in Japan, the breakfast is becoming less and less more available. If you go to Japan now, if you stay at the hotel, it comes with a breakfast, but it's usually a free buffet style. Mm-hmm. Or you go to those big corporate restaurants that serve beef rice bowls. They do like salmons and simple saba breakfast as a set meal, but not as like a restaurant set up with good service and hospitality.
Mm, and also I think hotel restaurants tend to charge you like $35, whereas yours, everything included, like around $20.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So you serve that Japanese style breakfast for breakfast and dinner.
Breakfast and lunch.
Yeah. At the Okonomi. Okay, and but you have okonomi for breakfast, lunch, and then the same space becomes Yuji Ramen at night. So why did you combine the two concepts in one place?
Yeah, so the most important message that we like to send to the customer is that you can really enjoy one fish twice throughout the day by utilizing the meat and the bones and head So the breakfast you eat the meat, and then the evenings you eat the you drink the rest with the noodle.
The dashi.
Dashi, yeah, making the broth all day. So it looks completely two different meals: breakfast ichiyosansai and a ramen bowls. But you are exactly eating the same fish.
So that's the totally sustainable way to eat.
Sustainable model for business too. Yeah, we really eliminate the food waste, so we can really offer customers everything at very reasonable prices. Yeah, it goes back to the customers.
Right, and one of the key phrases you use is "mottainai."
Mottainai is the mission of my business. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mottainai means what a waste, no waste, and then trying to create, come up with a business model where we can utilize everything. And also offer a variety of experiences and then new cultures.
Right. And the space of economy is so small, but there's no waste. So most efficiently functioning too.
Every square footage is utilized.
Right. Okay. And so the next one, the third place, establishment, that's the Osakana. So what is Osakana?
Osakana is a Japanese-style fish market, where we showcase only domestic wild fish for the purpose of cooking and for the purpose of sashimi. Mm. And then also in the back, we have an open kitchen where we offer cooking classes so that the people can learn how to cook those fish at home.
Mm. Right. So before you started Osakana, it was so hard to find a place to find a sashimi fish. Like, yeah. It's almost impossible, yeah, unless you go to Japanese grocery store, right? So, and it's the showcase at Osakana is very different. It's like a jewelry box instead of a drippy, wet,
kind
of a stinky fishy place.
Like, we try to not use the ice, mm, yeah, because ice is not really ideal for storing fish when it's filleted. Yeah.
Right. Mm. Okay, so listeners, you haven't been to Osakana. It's really worth visiting, even though you're looking at it. And then I'm sure you end up buying a lot of
some
fish.
Some people say it's a fake fish, just like the...
Yeah, but it's tasty. I have to say, I go there very often. So, okay, and each of your restaurant and shop totally makes sense to me as function, but what is the value, the mission behind your business?
Well, mission behind it is the localizing Japanese food in a way that the people in the past didn't do before.
Mm.
So there's the people before me, they came to the United States 1980 to introduce Japanese food to the United States, and then thanks to that whole effort, we have a big base of Japanese food fans. But at the same time, I thought that there are so many other people who haven't been exposed to Japanese food, and then I just wanted to find a different approach to reach to those customers.
So there are thousands of Japanese sushi restaurants, traditional sushi restaurants, ramen places, but what you do is slightly always different from other people do. So the ramen with the fish and Japanese breakfast, and the retail store, which is completely different way to treat fish. But what's in common is the local fish, right?
Yeah, local fish. And then instead of importing the actual fish from Japan, we're importing only the method and then the philosophy and the practices, and apply those to the fish from the United States and in order to elevate the quality of those fish.
Mm. So, for instance, when you still don't get fish from Tsukiji, but what you do is to speak with the distribution people?
That's one of them, but it's more important that we take care of the fish that's been distributed in the way that was done before. By changing how we do in the kitchen, you don't have to change things as much. I want to people always ask me, like, do you change the fish companies or do you change the fishermen? I think that should happen 10 years or 15 years later, after all the customers and all the restaurant people understand how to treat fish better. I think that should start first before we try to change other people. Even if you change the fishermen how to do ikijime, for example, you still don't know how to fillet. properly, then you ruin all the effort that was done before you received the fish. Mm. That's why my job is to make sure that in the kitchen, there is a lot we can improve without changing anything ahead of before the fish gets here.
Mm. Right. So, by the way, the ikejime is the way to kill fish and to preserve its freshness.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so technique to destroy the spiral cord with a wire, and then it's the way the fish doesn't suffer, and the blood comes out, and it keeps me really fish. So, yeah, but I heard that here in the States, all the fish is shipped in one box, and then underneath, the fish tend to be crushed.
Yeah,
because of the weight
of ice.
Right, but in Japanese style, they have individual box for each fish. So
and
that
fish in one layer.
Right. Mm. So that's really hard to change. Like you say, it would probably take like 10 years, maybe.
Yeah. But I think that can happen simultaneously. But I think my role, which can contribute a lot to the industry, is to focus on how to take care of the fish that's already been received. And then just change the mind.
So once you receive the fish, what's the care you take specifically? I mean, a little differently from...
The important thing is to remove all the fins and scales and the guts, and then what we call mizu arai. Mizu arai means washing with the water.
Mm.
So you have to cut through the bloodline after you open the stomach and take the gills out and the guts out. But you still have to run the blood with the running water so that no bacteria can grow while fish is kept.
Right. I heard that the blood, remaining blood, is the one that makes it fishy.
Yeah.
And stinking.
And it grows into the rest of the body if you don't remove it properly.
Right.
So that's why it's very simple, but it's very crucial.
Mm. Right. So you preserve it longer and fresher.
Longer and fresher, yeah.
Right. Okay. So now let's talk about your new restaurant. So first you opened a new restaurant called Rorimura Kyoto in Kyoto in April this year. So what's the concept of Rorimura Kyoto?
Rorimura Kyoto is the combination of what we do at Okonomi and what we do at Osakana.
Mm.
And we try to do those business ideas back in my country and in the city of Kyoto.
Mm.
And then the idea behind that is we named the place after the Rorimura at the L train stop, because that's where my business started.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Okonomi is 2 minutes walk from Rorimura train stations.
And on the L train.
On the L train, yeah. And then I never imagined myself being Kyoto, but when I visited Kyoto last year, I saw a very different city than that I remember when I was in college.
Mm.
There's a huge amount of customers from all over the world visiting Kyoto City, and I just thought that it's very similar to New York City. And that's why sending the message out from New York City and then the Kyoto at the same time from US and from Japan would make a lot of sense to spread our ideas.
Mm. Mm. So, in other words, you are kind of targeting visitors from abroad visiting Kyoto.
Yeah, like I would, I'll say both, but that's where we can contribute a lot because of how we do things in New York.
Mm.
It's a kind of the business model that we believe will be well accepted by the people who will be visiting Kyoto.
Mm, right. Okay, so what kind of menu do you offer at the Rorimura Kyoto?
So we do the same style of Ichiju Sansai at Rorimura Kyoto.
Mm.
So if you visit Kyoto, you can experience the similar breakfast experience that you have at Okonomi.
Mm.
And then in the afternoon, we open 7:30 in the morning. Because when you are traveling to Japan, you're jet lag, you wake up super early. That's why instead of opening at 9 a.m., we open 7:30 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually a real breakfast. And then we finish at lunchtime, and then we do a cooking class. Just like how we do at Osakana. How to butcher the fish, how to make sashimi, how to sharpen knife, sushi, and then the ramen. But we are still utilizing the one fish that come from breakfast, and then we utilize the bones and then head for the ramen class too.
Mm. And then, of course, they can taste what they learned.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Wow, what a perfect. I should take lessons
from Kyoto. And the fish we use in Kyoto is super, super high quality.
Mm.
And I'm very happy that we can provide such an amazing experience.
Right, because there's a big fish market. I've been there, the Kyoto fish market.
Kyoto has a really nice central fish market. It's very close by to my shop in Lorimar.
Mm. Wow, so that's ideal.
Mm.
Right. Okay, so... by the way, the Lorimar Kyoto is built on a renovated machiya style home. So what is machiya?
Machiya is pretty much old house. It means pretty much like just an old house in Japanese. And then there is no clear definition of what machiya is, but it has to be older than 1930 or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then... it's mostly a wood structure in a traditional way.
Mm.
And then there are a lot of housings like that in Japan that are now being like renovated and used for new business.
Mm.
And I found a really good one small machiya house in Kyoto, like 10 minutes walk from the main train station.
Mm.
And then we renovated the whole house, one floor and the second floor.
Right. So it's like, the... ordinary people's old house, which I think started as like Heian period, like 8th century, something that to now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's old. And then actually, I stayed at Airbnb in Kyoto.
Oh, wow.
And that was the renovated machiya.
Mm.
And you wake up in the morning, you smell the old wood and
it's
the tatami.
Nice, yeah.
And I didn't want to do that. Yeah, so you can experience that feeling at Lorimar Kyoto.
It's very hard to find those housings in Tokyo
because
everything is more... developed, but Kyoto City has more strict rules of how to preserve the sceneries and housings.
Mm.
That's why it's much easier to find a very cool machiya housings, which requires a lot of renovations and work, but it's so worth it.
And also you are supporting the tradition.
Yeah, definitely. Right. Yeah, like one of the things that you like to do always. So.
That's great. Okay, and so, where exactly Lorimar Kyoto is located? Is it close to the station, Kyoto station?
Yeah, so there is a train station, 2 minutes walk from the Lorimar Kyoto, which is a subway Karasuma line. It's called Gojo Karasuma train station. But you can also always walk from the Kyoto main train station, like 5-10 minutes walk, depending on how fast you walk.
Right. So who are the diners right now?
Yeah, the local people who live in the neighborhood and also the customers of our restaurants in Brooklyn and also the people who find us on Google. So it's a really interesting combination, and we try to find the common ground for the local people and then the tourists in Japan and the foreigners that are visiting Japan too. It's a very exciting new challenge.
Right. So are you surprised that they have many Japanese people coming?
Yeah.
That's definitely the supply of traditional Japanese breakfast place is rare. Nobody can afford making miso soup, cooked rice, and baked fish in the morning.
Yeah, like cooking fish is a lot of work at home. So we hope that we can bring the value to the both Japanese people in the neighborhood and also for the people from outside Japan.
Right. And who takes classes at Lorimar Kyoto?
So mostly the tourists.
Mm.
Yeah. I had customers from Australia, China, US, actually Brooklyn. And then
that's funny.
Yeah, like he actually lives on the Best Isle. It was very interesting.
Right. And what classes are popular?
The class that's popular is actually a fish butchery and a sashimi class, where the customers can actually take the ikejime fish and then how to break it down with our staff. And then you actually make a sashimi set meal at the end of the class with a fish that you actually break it down. Yeah.
That's advanced.
Yeah,
maybe I should take one of those too.
The quality of the fish itself is just so amazing that, I think really good value.
Mm. So are you all from you get the fish all from Kyoto market?
It comes through the Kyoto central market. Mm. Yeah, Kyoto city doesn't have a ocean.
Right.
Yeah, so it comes from Osaka Bay mm-hmm. or a northern part of Kyoto prefecture.
Mm. Yeah. So I'm curious, do you get different kind of fish in Kyoto, like Kansai area versus, you know, Tsukiji area?
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Right. Mm. So that's another reason to visit Kyoto.
Yeah, a lot of the fish are actually raised in west side of Japan, mm. like Hamachi, Kampachi and stuff too. Mm. So so close by to Kyoto.
Nice. Mm. Okay. And by the way, how did you manage to open a restaurant in Kyoto while you still live in Brooklyn and you didn't have any connection, right? Do they have a business partner?
Yeah, so I opened Yuji Ramen Shin Yokohama at the Ramen Museum.
Mm.
But I share this vision to the people that I recruited. So I have an amazing manager in Japan who used to live in New York. Mm. And then I approached to her, and then she believed in my vision of growing business from Ramen Museum. And then do more in Japan.
Mm.
So Chieko Hashizume, she's the name of the manager of my entire business in Japan, and then she's been amazing asset for my company in mm. Japan. Manage the ramen museum, making hundreds of ramens a day, and also going to Kyoto, and then get the bank loan with me, and then hiring people. It's been a very crazy 2 years
wow.
working with her. Yeah.
Mm, sounds like she's a superwoman.
Superwoman. Yeah.
Right. Okay, so let's take a quick break here. And when we come back, we'll talk about Yujitsu's latest project, Okozushi. So please stay with us.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Korin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. Their knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant, from French to Pan-Asian to American, and that is why they're located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Korin's unique store in Lower Manhattan is home to perhaps the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan, plus the rarest natural sharpening stones and exquisitely designed tableware. They also host special events such as knife sharpening demonstrations and parties with New York's most famous chefs and restaurateurs. Korin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the implicit and elegance of Japanese culture to your table, be it in your home or in the finest restaurant. For more information, visit korin.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Eats, broadcasting live from a studio in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host, Kakiko Katayama, and my guest today is Yuji Haraguchi, who is the chef owner of Yuji Ramen, Okonomi, Osakana, Okozushi, in Brooklyn, and Lorima Kyoto in Kyoto, Japan. So now let's talk about your newest project, Okozushi, which opened just 2 weeks ago. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
So what's the meaning of Okozushi?
Okozushi is a made-up name.
Okay.
Yeah. So we introduced the Kyoto style of sushi, known as a hakozushi, and then temari sushi.
Mm.
Hakozushi is also part of the reason why I named this restaurant Okozushi, because it sounds like a hakozushi. Mm-hmm. And then also Okonomi started this whole new business opportunities for us. So I took the Okonomi Oko as well.
Mm.
That's why it's called Okozushi.
Right. So a lot of your passion and the mission.
I spent a lot of time thinking about the best name for this.
Right.
And I came to good conclusion.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
So you are so good at finding something new nobody did before. So this, this hakozushi concept, right? So you call it Kyoto-style sushi that you serve at the okozushi?
Yeah, I think... So the sushi is probably the most favorite food myself. And then every time I go to Japan, I try to eat sushi. But when I was in Kyoto many times last year for this project, I was not able to find a lot of traditional sushi restaurants. But instead, I found this hakozushi style restaurant in Kyoto. Mm. That was so fascinating. And then that gave me a new whole idea of what I can do with the sushi, which I never thought that I would do ever.
Interesting. Yes, so recall that one of the kaiseki chefs I spoke to in Kyoto, and he said, don't eat nigiri, which is, we are familiar with nigiri sushi in New York City and mainly abroad. Because, you know, nigiri is from Tokyo, yes. And you should not eat nigiri in Kyoto because you don't find the best one. And eat the hakozushi.
Yeah, yeah, it's a very interesting, like the authentic hakozushi was so different. I'm from east side of Japan, so I don't see that. Didn't see that when I was in Japan either. So it was, but historically, it's much older than the nigiri sushi.
Mm. So let's just define hakozushi, because I think most of our listeners like, what is that? Hakozushi? It's boxed sushi.
Yeah, it's a sushi that's made in a box. That's made in a box by press. So you put the fish and the rice in a mold, and then it's a shape of box, and then you press it. And then you take it out and you cut it. So sometimes you find it as a side sushi menu at the sushi restaurant, but it's very rare to find just hakozushi concept sushi restaurants in the United States.
Mm.
And then also the idea of hakozushi was to use the fish a long time ago that was not able to be eaten as a sashimi, so they actually use it the fermented carp, and then made a sushi that's like the more authentic origin nobu sushi in Japan.
Right, so it's a pre-refrigeration. This is the purpose is more for not eating a fresh one, but fermented, preserved food,
so that it was more as a almost like a bento box. You take it with you. So that's why the rice was. Seasoned with vinegar and sugar and salt, which was not the case in edamame sushi because they eat it right away. Yeah, that's why every fish was cured with vinegar or kombu or salt, so that everything was meant to be preserved and taken with you.
Right, and traditionally, you know, people call it the hikarimono, like a mackerel or like a Pacific story, the kind of like really perishable fish, right? And that means there's a lot of umami, and along with the kombu and other elements put in the box, it's like umami bomb.
Like those hikarimono actually cures better than the white fish. Like a more complex flavor develops as you cure it. That's why it tastes so good when it's cured or fermented.
Right. It's really hard to find press sushi, hakozushi in New York. And for instance, I really like Kyoya restaurant in East Village. And they have hakozushi or mackerel. And when I make a reservation, I just...
You want to hear?
Reserve hakozushi too. So, yeah. Anyways, I'm so glad you opened this place. Hakozushi is one, and also you feature temari sushi. So what is temari sushi?
Temari is a sushi shape of a bowl-shaped sushi, and then it was designed for the geisha ladies in Kyoto to be able to eat without messing up their makeup. So that's why it's small. So you don't have to open a big mouth.
Face.
But. No, yeah. And there are a lot of... temari sushi restaurants in Kyoto. It's very nice, yeah.
So basically, it's kind of new invention for Kyoto and Maiko, like younger geisha. So it's made in a plastic wrap when you make it?
Yeah, you can make it with a plastic wrap. There are a lot of methods you can make. At Osakana, we teach customers how to make a temari sushi with a plastic wrap.
Right, but professionally, you don't use the wrap.
Yeah, we have a special mold design for it.
Nice. And usually, it's really decorated pretty.
Yeah.
Right. So, and it's like a bento item, and if you go to Depachika in Japanese,
it's like filled with temari sushi. It's like,
right.
packed tight.
Right, so it's beautiful. I'm sure that a lot of people expect you to serve nigiri sushi, okay, because it's sushi.
Mm-hmm.
So people going to sushi, it's like, but what is hakuzushi in temari? What's their reaction?
It's very interesting. No one asks for nigiri at our restaurant because I think our menu clearly defines that the it's a Kyoto-style sushi served without soy sauce.
Mm.
Yeah, so that the we try to set the expectation from the customers, right? So that they expect something different and new.
Mm.
Yeah, it's almost not like omakase at all because it's a set meal, but our customers, especially in New York, always want to know the new food culture, and that is authentic and then true. So we are really bringing the culture of sushi from Kyoto to New York City. That's why that's what customers expect from okuzushi already.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's why we don't have to spend too much time talking to customers, that we don't do inside out crispy salmon roll or like dragon roll or tempura roll. Yeah. It's only in New York I think it works.
It's interesting because, to be honest, when you said long a while ago, you said, are you going to open a hakuzushi place? I was like, I hope it's going to work out. But people don't, I mean, people are ready to try
a
new
style. And also the price point too, yeah, we try to aim it at the very affordable price point with no tip, and then even BIOB, so that the money customers spend at okuzushi will be between $30 to $50 maximum.
Mm.
And you're going to have a full meal. And then if it's higher tier, $45, it's more three courses.
Mm.
Sashimi, hakuzushi, temari, and then temaki sushi. So it's actually a lot of value that we can provide.
Totally, yeah. Mm. So yeah, for $45, six pieces hakuzushi, two pieces temari, two pieces temaki and sashimi, which is a bargain. And lately, I think in New York City, you pay $200, $300 for sushi, kaiseki, kind of like course menu. So it's totally a bargain.
Yeah. So then I thought that that's something new that we can also provide to the New York City sushi market. But that's only achievable by using local fish, I think.
Right. So what kind of, like I said earlier, traditionally, hakuzushi tend to be more shiny fish, which is more perishable. But you kind of expanding the scope of hakuzushi because you're utilizing any kind of good local fish, right?
Yeah. So if we limit what kind of fish we can use for this hakuzushi operation, it won't make sense as a business because we cannot ask fishermen to get specific type of fish only consistently at the level that we want. So it's more up to us how flexible we should be so that we can provide the value to our customers and also keep introducing the new sushi cultures to New York City.
Right. So what kind of fish is in season, for instance, right now?
Our signature fish is always bluefish.
Mm.
Yeah, bluefish is very common sports fish. Not so popular fish for a lot of people to eat at home, but it's amazing when it's cured with kombu and salt. Yeah. And then we get a lot of blackfish. Blackfish is very local Long Island fish. Eat a lot of crabs and shellfish. Has a really strong texture.
Mm.
Yeah, it ferments, it cures very well too.
Mm. Right. So it can be hakuzushi or temari sushi.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay. I haven't been there yet, so it was like 5 minutes away from my place. I have to go there soon. So the customer's reaction, they love the new thing.
Mm-hmm.
And also, of course, they find the normal, the expectation for nigiri sushi, mm-hmm. that's satisfied too, because it's just a different shape in a way, right? Okay, so you seem to have unlimited ideas and energy to educate people about how to live your life.
I'll run out one day.
Yeah. So do you have any plans in mind already for the next one?
Next one? So I think I'm good for now.
Well, I heard you are planning to open a place in Tokyo, though.
Oh, Tokyo. Yeah. Yes, that's happening too. Yes. Mm. So, Tokyo, the neighborhood called Kiyosumi Shirakawa, I'm going to open our first Yuji Ramen brick and mortar restaurant.
Wow. Yeah,
this summer.
Mm. So, the Kiyosumi Shirakawa is like Brooklyn, if Tokyo, right? It's very up and coming.
Yeah. Like Suminagawa River is very close, similar looking to the East River in New York City. And then the train that goes to Kiyosumi Shirakawa from Tokyo Station, just like L train, geographically, it's very similar looking. So it's very funny that we found that spot.
Right.
Yeah. And then the east side of Tokyo is not as well developed as the west side of Japan, such as Shibuya and Ikebukuro. So we were able to find a good neighborhood that has more neighborhood feeling.
Mm. Yeah. Right. So, when do you think it's going to be open?
We're aiming for this summer. We are doing the renovations right now of the, once again, old house. So it requires a lot of constructions and energies.
Oh, it's like a Machiya style again?
It's called Nagaya style, so from Tokyo. So it's similar.
Right. Yeah, Nagaya, it's more like, again, it's very democratic.
Yeah.
Yeah, normal, ordinary, common people's house.
It's right next to the Kiyosumi garden by the Kiyosumi train station. It's a 2 minutes walk, so location's very nice too, by the garden. Yeah, I'm very excited to do what we can do in Japan with the concept that we came up with in Brooklyn.
And then, of course, now it's that Tsukiji Fish Market's fish.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I'm already talking to the guy at the Tsukiji Fish Market, who used to be my boss. And then he's going to look for what kind of bones that he can constantly supply to us in Japan.
Wow. Well, good luck.
A lot to do.
Right. And so where listeners can find your latest update?
Latest update is my best way is, I think, the Okonomi BK Instagram.
Okay.
Yeah. We make all the announcements through that account.
Okay. Yeah. So it's Okonomi, OKONOMI.
Yes. BK. BK at... I don't know, the Instagram, yeah.
Okay, and of course, so you have I think you have a separate website for each restaurant. Ramen, Okonomi, Osakana.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there, well, if you go one of them, there's all
it's linked all linked to it. Yeah.
Right. Okay, so, well, thank you for joining again.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, and good luck, and please come back once you open, maybe the next time you open the Tokyo place.
Tokyo place. Let's see how the ramen is in Tokyo.
Yeah. Okay, so listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for show topics or guests, please contact us at japanese@heritageradionetwork.org or akikotaema.com. And Japanese is live at 3 p.m. on Mondays and always available at heritageradionetwork.org, iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. And our engineer today is David Tadashore. And thank you for listening. I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.